You're listening to The Word from Westwood, a series of podcasts featuring sermons preached at Westwood United Methodist Church in Los Angeles, California.
Wouldn't it be a wonderful thing if we could take a break, let's say for a month or so, from the things that are so relentless in our lives? Imagine a month with no deadlines, a month with no bills to pay, a month where there was no arguing among family members, a month where the media agrees not to cover any politicians, a month when the single parent has all the help they could ever need. Now, in the book of Leviticus, there's a mention of the year of Jubilee every 50 years when debts are forgiven and slaves and prisoners were set free. And it was also known as a time when God was especially present in the midst of the people. Well, I think it would be great to have at least the month of Jubilee when the relentless disappears. What do you think? Imagine a month when people could live in peace. A month when differences are considered a gift to the community rather than something to look at with critical eyes. It's hard to be different. It's hard to be different. For all the talk about how important individuality is in our culture, there are still overwhelming pressures to conform, to fit in, to not be different. Most people want to feel that we belong, right? Most parents want the same for their children. We see it start at a very early age with parental concerns building up that their child might not be acclimating to the environment around them. It certainly gets reinforced in the school experience growing up. You remember those kids that were always the last to be chosen when picking teams for events? It reinforced differentness, and sometimes it reinforced it in very lasting ways. It's also a time when seeds are planted as to why we need to be suspicious of people. When offhanded comments are heard about people of different nationalities, people of different racial and ethnic backgrounds, there is a lot that happens to each of us during formative years that subtly suggests and whispers to us, the world is a scary place. Or perhaps it you know about those people. Or maybe it's, we don't do things like that. These messages, sometimes unintentional, are relentless when we grow up. The process of implanting them is so deep in our psyches, we might not even be aware that they exist. And too often, the result is our starting to adopt an attitude where we choose to demonize the different. Demonizing the different has a long history in the human family. When we examine the ancient texts, the Hebrews had many people they considered unclean, unworthy, no better than the dogs in the street. The biblical record, on the other hand, also discusses the fact that God's chosen people were more often than not seen as the problem. We have a nicer term that we apply to it nowadays, scapegoating, because we don't want to believe that we actually could demonize people. It wasn't confined only to the most ancient texts. Our New Testament makes it clear that there were some who were considered subhuman. Some that followers of Jesus considered subhuman. The Samaritans are a perfect example of that. Well, Mark provided in his gospel an interesting parable we heard read this morning. You recall, we were introduced to a landowner who chose to plant a vineyard. And from the sound of the story, it was very carefully planted, and everything was put properly in its place to produce a wonderful wine. He moved away, and he trusted the operation to tenant farmers. Well, the tenant arrangement was one in which the owner was due a portion of the production every year. But it seems, as the story tells us, that the tenants had a different idea. A series of slaves were sent by the owner to ask for the owner's portion. They were badly treated by the tenant farmers, some beaten, others were outright killed. And it was at this point that the landowner sent his son, who he was absolutely sure would receive the respect of the tenants. But as we know, it was not to be. The owner's son was killed. His body was thrown out of the vineyard. Suffice it to say, this story was one of carnage. From the gospel's point of view, this was a story that spoke of God's relationship to the world. That's what it represented. Those slaves, so to speak, that the landowner sent were the series of prophets and others who throughout the history of Israel were treated poorly and killed, until it finally came to the point that the Son, the Christ, came into the world. And those who were there listening to the parable, they knew exactly what this story meant. The chief priests and elders and scribes were a part of the audience that had gathered around Jesus that day as he told this story. They knew. They knew that they were represented by the tenant farmers in this parable. They understood that Jesus was the rejected stone that was spoken of. And they also knew that the crowd of, and in the midst of this, they had decided they wanted to arrest him. But they also knew that this crowd that surrounded them of eager listeners was never going to allow this to happen, so they abandoned their plan. It's clear from Mark's perspective that Jesus represented trouble to those who were considered the establishment. Since we already know the outcome of the story, we know that they cast him as different and apart from what they said was tradition. And they eventually chose to demonize Jesus. They followed that deeply ingrained human pattern, which was to make those who dissent or those we don't like the enemy. And what was not specifically mentioned in this parable, but is a part of the subtext, is that Jesus identified with the poor as well as those who had been displaced. And it's not a stretch to suggest that the poor and the sojourner could be viewed as different to our ancient counterparts. And we certainly have a sense by listening to that story of what happened, what the establishment did to those they didn't want to deal with or were different. The sad thing is, it's obvious that little has changed on this front since the first century. There are far too many points in our world history of separating, sometimes condemning those people who are different and who represent change the same as Jesus represented change. There have been any number of examples of groups of people who have adopted this attitude of exceptionalism and superiority and have been responsible for instilling terror in people, which sometimes have resulted in acts of horrific genocide. The Holocaust is a perfect example. Well, friends, the church has been equally as culpable. We have a long history, for example, of excommunicating people, sending them out of the church because we did not agree on issues of theology. We also have a long history of excluding people from the fellowship because of skin color or orientation or the language that is spoken. We have been relentless in our condemnation of people throughout our history because they were different. It's become painfully clear over these last months that demonizing the different is a political sport. Most prominent is the conversation, if we can call it that, surrounding the subject of immigration. Immigration is nothing new to the human family. Anthropologists point to ancient shifting populations that have consistently been a part of our history as the human family. Often these migrations were instigated because of changes in climate or drought or famine. In our modern age, the inequality of economic opportunity, as well as war and persecution, have been responsible for people trying to find a better place, a better life. Yet many cause us to see these people as different. They don't belong. Opinions, as we well know in this nation, are varied and wide. From those who embrace the immigrant to those who demonize the immigrant. On one level, this is so hard to understand when we say our nation was built on the assumption, as it says in our founding documents, that all people are created equal and all people are entitled to life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness. Unless, of course, we don't believe that the Constitution, because it didn't say it specifically, included women and minorities and the long list which can follow. What is even more intriguing is how this nation of immigrants, which we all are, have short memories. But when I think about it, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised because it's close to home for all of us. I think of my dear Nona, who before she came to this country left poverty and was here as a poor woman and a sojourner to this place. But as loving as she was, and I will always remember her as a loving woman, she brought many old country attitudes with her. You see, a particular thing in her case was the region from which one hailed in Italy could result sometimes in looks of disgust and sometimes accompanied by words that were generally spoken in Italian so we couldn't understand. She always had things to say about the Siciliano or the Piemontese. You see, for her, there was a definite pecking order. I think back with amusement of a woman I met some time ago who was from southern Italy. And when we spoke of my northern Italian heritage, she looked at me and she said, "You're not Italian, you're Austrian." In her mind, any family who resided north of Rome were not true Italians. We were different. We were not one of the clan. Many of the prejudices my grandmother showed had been instilled by the church in her. Anti-Semitism, for example. It really didn't stop there. Subtle reminders continued as I was growing up. I could remember driving in a car with my parents, sitting in the back seat of the car when words would be spoken, "Lock your doors." And this happened in neighborhoods that were considered unsafe, even though over all those years there was never an instance of anyone approaching the car in any threatening kind of way. It also became very real in the community in which my family lived prior to coming to Westwood. Like most suburbs of Los Angeles, it was originally pretty homogeneous until the rise of immigration, and in particular, Taiwanese immigration and the way it changed the community. When the kids were young, the Taiwanese population represented about a quarter of the school population, and nowadays it's about 90%. Longtime residents in the community, as is typically the case, became angry. They did not like or want change from these interlopers. And the rumors began. The rumors began about illicit activity and all kinds of things. Because you see, for those old timers, it was so important to demonize the different. It was hard to watch. It was hard to hear. And it's not a story that's limited to that town. It happens all over this country, friends. And what is maddening is when the Christian faith that is espoused by some can be the source of the vitriol about the different. This is one of the things, friends, on which I believe the Gospels are completely clear. Those who followed Jesus were to be friends of the poor, of the sojourner, of the different. It is not something that can be argued away theologically. It is one of the truth that transcends cultural change and scientific knowledge, which is a part of our modern world. It's a given for followers of Jesus. This week, one of the members of our faith community brought to my attention an opinion piece in a publication called The Hill. And our Bishop Minerva Carcano authored this along with Sister Simone Campbell, and it was entitled Defining Disgraceful. It certainly speaks to the current condition, and I think it is an article which all who claim to be followers of Jesus should read. You can find a link to it on the website for our annual conference, www.calpacumc.org, and go to the bishop's area and you'll find this article. Very important to read because the statement directly addresses the current conversations which are filling the airwaves. I'm sure many of you, like me, are angered and frustrated by what we hear. You see, I do not understand how persons can wax eloquent on their strong faith while at the same time parade their dismissive attitudes towards millions of people. I am tired of listening to people speak of faith, whether politician or citizen, when their actions and their attitudes are in conflict with Jesus' teaching about loving neighbor as self. Friends, being a follower of Jesus is not about special status or superiority. Being a follower of Jesus is about doing the work of hope and grace and peace and welcoming the family together. Friends, this is the time that different voices need to be heard. Your voices need to be heard. This is the time for faith that is lived out in our actions, not just words. In fact, it's probably the never-ending words which are really the tools of division and acrimony, bringing us to the point of our relentless demonizing of the different. But friends, the good news is that God is never going to give up on us. Never. God's love abounds us all around. The grace to help us take a chance, stepping out faithfully, is right here. It can be touched. So let's spend some time figuring out what we need to do, and more importantly, undo. Let's ask ourselves, what have we taught and are continuing to teach our children? Let's consider what we might do in the weeks to come to counter the anger and the cynicism and the fear-mongering that is so perpetually present. God gives us the ability. God gives us the ability. Jesus has shown us the way. You see, we can be people of the good news. What will our choice be? Amen.
Westwood United Methodist Church is located at 10497 Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles, between Westwood Village and Beverly Hills. Sundays are at the heart of this faith community's life, and we invite you to worship every Sunday at 10 a.m. A wide variety of opportunities for all ages are also available every week. To learn more, visit us on the web at www.westwoodumc.org or call the church office at area code 310-474-4511. I'm Janet Hoskins. Westwood United Methodist Church. Do justice, love kindness, walk humbly with God.